Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's episode is going to be a four questions with Patrick Cohen. Patrick's an actor, writer, and director, and his short film, First Dates, played at Film Invasion LA last year. And you can't watch it right now at the discoverindiefilm.com website, but you will soon. Besides being a really entertaining film, I love recommending First Dates because it was written and directed by an actor who just so happened to highlight his scene partner more than himself as the lead, which, if you watch a lot of independent films, that's pretty rare. Whenever you've got somebody who's basically doing everything on every side of that camera, I'm always curious what their favorite films are going to be. So let's just get right to it. Here's Patrick Cohen's answers to the four questions. Oh, did I say the four questions? No, I didn't. Okay, I'll rattle them off. Favorite films of all time, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. Okay, here's Patrick.
At first, I feel like I should preface this by saying asking a movie fan what their favorite movie is like asking a human what their favorite thing on Earth is. It's like, there's a lot of categories, man. Like, I like breathing. I like swimming. I like pizza, right? It's like, there's a lot. It's hard to answer. So almost always I go somewhere in the vicinity of Raiders of the Lost Ark when someone asks me what my favorite movie is. And it's for the simplest reason that it's the first videotape I ever wore out. It's the movie I've seen more than any other movie. It's no exaggeration to say I've seen that movie at least 300 times in its entirety. And I don't think it's why I want to get in a film. It's why I wanted to be Indiana Jones.
Right.
You know, it's like so
yeah, that's a special.
It's like so, yeah, it's so deeply entrenched in my psyche as a young child that it is a great movie, but I don't love it for great movie reasons. I love it because it's Indiana Jones and it's awesome. You know, so that's almost always what I say when I say it's my favorite movie. And then you said I think I have a max of three answers here, right? Is that how we work?
People do one, people do four, people do five. I don't know.
So let's say that that's my favorite, and with honorable mentions to The Quiet Man with John Wayne, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. If you have not seen The Quiet Man, you should see. It's unbelievable. You have to get over that weird thing that modern audiences have with John Wayne, right? Where people are like, ugh, John Wayne is not... Dude, John Wayne was great at certain things, and he's great at them in this movie. It's got everything you want. It's like funny and romantic and old school, manly in like, you know, in the ways that if we just remember it's of its time are still charming, you know, things like that. And it's just so much, it's just such a great movie and a great score. So that's often what I say.
Where was that one in his career? Was it like in his prime or
it was a little after halfway.
He made a turn. Being like, I think he felt monotonous and he started branching.
This was still John Wayne prime, but it wasn't young John Wayne. This was John Wayne. He was John Wayne, you know, but it wasn't The Shootist, which is a freaking great. It was his last movie, right? So I don't know if you've seen The Shootist, but The Shootist is great. But that's like real acting. I'm trying to get to a deeper level. I'm actually dying of cancer while playing a guy dying of cancer. You know, that was a virtuoso performance for John Wayne. But this is the middle of the road in terms of his timeline wise. But it's I think maybe The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is a maybe Stagecoach or better films. But I mean, it's by far my favorite John Wayne film. Anybody who remembers the movie E.T., it's the movie that they were watching, that E.T.'s watching at home when he grabs the girl and kisses her, and then Elliot grabs the girl and kisses her and has to step on a book in science class to do it. But that sequence is from A Quiet Man. Yeah.
I didn't put that together.
Yeah. So The Quiet Man. That's almost always one of my favorites. And then It's a Wonderful Life because I'm a sucker. It's funny. I didn't know I was romantic until I started writing. And then I was like, why do I like all these romantic things? I don't love romantic movies. And I was like, well, there's a romance to It's a Wonderful. It's not exclusively a man, but it's a romantic film. It's not exclusively about him and Mary, but that's obviously the heart of it. But it's really a romantic film. And it's got the heartstrings pulled in the right way, and you know, that's again of its time, but freaking great. So those are probably my top three. Yeah,
good top three.
Yeah, and honorable mention.
Very classic.
Honorable mention: Empire Strikes Back, obviously, because you know, Any nerd who doesn't.
Oh my God, we could have the any best nerd, debate.
Any nerd who doesn't talk about that movie is crazy.
We could have the best debate about that, but I already know to step on that third rail of Star Wars
right.
kills a whole podcast.
Plus, when you lose a debate on your own podcast, it's always embarrassing.
It'd be horrible.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want that.
Absolutely. Well, number two is a film you think is underrated.
It's funny. I say this, and sometimes people look at me like I'm nuts, and some people are like, yeah. I think it's the most underrated movie of all time for me. I will preface it by saying it's a mess, but I'm going to defend it because it's as good as other movies that are a mess, which I'm going to talk about. But I think the most underrated movie is 1941, which is John Williams' kind of famous commercial flop. Everybody hated with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and you know, set when the Japanese were trying to invade America during World War II. Yeah. I
had friends who loved
that. Dude, I love that movie.
When I was in like middle school, people were loving that film.
Yep.
I have to confess, I
never seen
saw
it?
Bits and pieces.
Yeah. So people either haven't seen it or hate it, but I swear the people that hate it because they've read about how they're supposed to hate it.
And that was Landis.
If you literally sit back and just watch it. Spielberg. Spielberg's famous flop. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's if you just sit back and honest to God, just watch it. Dude, I mean, John Belushi is a drunk fighter pilot trying to find the Japanese flying all over America. Like, come on, dude, it's hilarious and it's a mess. But if you're being honest with yourself, like everybody I know loves Caddyshack. I love Caddyshack. If you're being honest with yourself, Caddyshack's a mess of a movie.
Oh yeah.
Right? 1941 is no worse from the script level than Caddyshack is. And actually, it's got a lot of the same attributes where you have performances that are better than the script and the end result is so funny that you shouldn't care about all that. And I think...
Yeah, Harold Ramis didn't even know how to direct when he made Caddyshack.
Sure.
Caddyshack is a disaster of a film.
I don't think 1941 is a disaster of a film. There's a Zoot Suit Riot.
My assumption is that Spielberg did a better job directing at his worst than Harold Ramis on his first time.
I think so. It's certainly more cinematic than Caddyshack is, but
I got to see it.
Yeah, I think you should watch it, and I actually think you should message me immediately after you watch it and tell me if I'm nuts. Because you're going to be in one of two camps. There are people that tell me I'm nuts, and people that tell me, like, yes! I don't know. I could watch a grown man cry at Dumbo while ordering people to their deaths all day long. And it hits similar notes to Dr. Strangelove. Now, Dr. Strangelove is a far superior film. I'm not pretending that's on that level. But it's similar to, can you make war hilarious? Can you make war absurd? I mean, war is absurd, right? But can you make it laugh out loud absurd? And I mean, I just, there's Ned Beatty destroying his house trying to fire a gun at the sub. And I mean, Christopher Lee plays a Nazi. Christopher Lee plays a Nazi, man. Christopher Lee, come on. There's so much good stuff in this movie.
I'm piqued. I know my buddies who watched Caddyshack over and over. When I was a kid, it was rare to have a VCR, right?
Yeah.
Like only the rich people have VCRs.
Right.
So my rich friend who lived away in
the late 40s were weird like that.
Yeah, I know. No, believe me. It was the tape deck was the size of a refrigerator. But they had Caddyshack, so we watched Caddyshack all the time and Stripe.
Yeah.
And 1941, like they would throw it on every once in a while, and I don't remember sitting all the way through it.
See, that's the company I would put it in. It's Caddyshack and Stripes. Because, again, it's these comedies that are kind of funnier than they are good, right? I love Stripes, but Stripes is not a good movie. It's a vehicle for Bill Murray to make you laugh all the time.
I would debate you on that. I think Stripes
has half in a James Bond RV that makes no sense.
I think it's got really interesting three-act. I think the three-act structure is...
I like when he tries to spatula her under the butt off the stove, but I don't think that makes it a great movie. I think it's a very, very fun movie.
But I probably haven't seen it for about 35 years.
Rewatch it, and the third act makes such little sense. I think most of us, when we think of Stripes, we think of the training. We think of the army training, sir. We think of that stuff, which is great. And then it goes into this weird super RV sequence, which makes no sense. And it's just kind of strange.
Right.
I'm bashing a movie I love. So to be fair, like Stripes is great, but I put it in that Caddyshack category of a movie that's better than it should have been. because it doesn't have a great script. It doesn't have it's not like, oh my God, this is so well constructed as a film. It's just like, dude, point the camera at Bill Murray and he'll make you laugh. And 1941 is very similar
all the time.
1941 is very similar. John, who doesn't want to watch John Belushi?
I know he was so special.
And he's just out of his mind in this movie. Go watch.
All right, so here will be a fun one. Yeah. Is your overrated? And you're not saying it's bad,
right? I'm saying it's overrated. So there are lots of options for this. So I think I want to make sure I'm saying this delicately, because I actually don't think people are going to like when I say this, because, well, maybe they will. I don't know. I know a lot of people that don't like this movie. But I think The Shape of Water is the worst movie to win Best Picture since Gladiator. And I was the guy who thought Gladiator was fun, but didn't deserve Best Picture. Not the guy that thought Gladiator was terrible. So I'm not saying Shape of Water is terrible. I'm suggesting it's not good. And people raved about that movie. It's not even Del Toro's best movie. I don't think it's even close.
No.
I mean, Pan's Labyrinth is his best movie, but I prefer Hellboy. I
was blown away when it won.
Yeah. And
made me lose an Oscar pool.
And well, then you probably had good taste in film and you should have been right, because I don't think it was good. I think it was basically beat for beat Splash, only the roles reversed. If you break down Splash, right, it's the meeting, the falling in love, the rescuing, and then the running away, and then we're going to spend their lives underwater together. It's Splash, right? That's what it is.
Fair statement.
Yeah.
But you're saying it's not even good.
Well, I have a problem with movies where I don't connect to the main character.
Oh, really?
And I have problems with movies that expect me to assume that this character could outwit and a military organization with this perfectly run timed escape plan in a day's worth of notice to sneak a fish man, presumably one of the most guarded secrets ever, out of a compound. There was a lot of gaps in logic for me.
Her performance, like her acting,
I think
covered up a lot of the movie's flaws.
I think the performance was fine. I don't have a problem with the performance. I think Michael Shannon was Michael Shannon, but he was good, right? General Zod was fine. I don't know. Nothing about it spoke to me. And some of that, movies are subjective, right?
Yeah.
But so maybe it's just not a story that resonates with me, having never fallen in love with a fish. I don't know. But I think
fish are great.
Fish, a little slimy, I would imagine.
Was awkward. Well, yeah. I remember. So my memory of Shape of Water was sitting through it and going, "Wow, it's just a straight up fairy tale for grown-ups. Like, this is no deeper than a fairy tale."
Yeah.
Like, it's just a fantasy fairy tale. And I was, like, just watching it going, you know, motherfucker, how did they even get it made? You know what I mean? I didn't hate it, and I liked it, but I kind of just admired the fact that they made something that kooky.
It was kooky. It was definitely kooky.
I was a Three Billboards person.
All the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there's something else that I liked better, too. But Three Billboards.
Three Billboards was the best picture of the year. Absolutely. Yeah. I just, that movie did nothing for me. And as most petulant filmmaker fanboys, I assume if it did nothing for me, it means it sucks.
Well, not to mention that, it is tough to see something that you don't even respect win Best Picture.
Yeah, well, especially when there's stuff out there that I think is just genius, you know? Like Three Billboards, perfect example. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolute genius.
I think so. Yeah. So that's my most overrated. Yeah. Right.
Well, your number four is a lesser known people should seek out.
Have you ever seen a movie called It's a Disaster?
It rings a bell.
So it's a movie about these friends. It's Julia Stiles and David Cross that are like this new couple that go to this house to do like a brunch. And it's like this group of friends that always get together for brunch. And this time there's something extra on top, is that the couple that always hosts are getting divorced. So there's like this bombshell they're waiting to drop. And it also happens to be the day that terrorists attack the city and everyone's going to die. So there's a dirty bomb it's a nerve gas that gets released, and it's coming, and you can't stop it, and you can't get out of its radius. You have to just wait to die. So it's about this brunch. It's this dark comedy. It's very much in the vein. It's not written by these people, but it's very much in the vein of like Death at a Funeral, mm-hmm. or like, you know, it's
the British.
Yeah, right. Right. Thank you. The British version. But it's like there's nerve gas hitting and everybody's dying and there's a knock on the door and it's their friends and they're like, please let us in. It's so horrible out there. And the reaction is, well, you should be at a brunch on time. If you got the brunch on time, you'd be inside. You know, it's like that kind of a tone, you know?
I'm a huge David Cross fan.
If you like David Cross, you should watch this movie because
rang a bell. I think I might have seen. No, I obviously didn't see it because the nerve gas thing is
right. And I don't want to upsell this movie. It's not going to change your life, right? But I think it's a movie that almost nobody I've talked to has ever heard of. And I think it's really funny. I'm only aware of it because a friend of mine did a stage version of it in LA and I went to see it and I was like, what the hell is this? And it was based on a movie and I went and saw the movie and it's like, oh, this, I liked it. You know, it's a dark, quirky comedy that I think is up certain alleys. If it's up your alley, you'll really like it. Yeah.
I don't see how a dark comedy.
About the end of the world at brunch. Yeah.
Then letting some friends die.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for being late.
And then the rest of the movie, you see them dead on the front steps every time they do an exterior shot. Yeah, getting pecked at by birds.
See, I love dark comedies, and we get so few of them. We really
They're hard to do well because I think you get something like The Lobster, which I enjoyed, but I think wasn't as good as it could have been maybe. And I think it's because when you go dark, sometimes you also go really weird, and if you go really weird, sometimes it's hard to go. Sometimes you lose that razor edge of I'm laughing and off put. Sometimes it just becomes off put by the end, you know. I think it's very hard to do. I certainly think if I ever make a dark comedy, it'll be years after working on my filmmaking skills.
That was a great list. I gotta say, I'm always inspired to go see the films that filmmakers mention, but Patrick's were really good. Absolutely am guilty of kind of blowing off the John Wayne thing, which is bullshit. I gotta dive into John Wayne. I gotta start with Patrick's recommendations and, you know, maybe spread out a little. And on top of it, man, he mentions the David Cross film. Don't get me started on David Cross. He and everyone he works with are genius. Okay, so thank you very much to Patrick Cohen for coming in, doing an interview, and doing the four questions. You should watch his film First Dates when you get a chance, which is hopefully going to be really soon. Go to discoverindiefilm.com for way more than podcast info. There's lots of great films embedded. There's links to great feature films there. There's info on the two film festivals that I work at, and more to come. And if social media is your thing, @DIFWINS is the handle. That's the handle for Discover Indie Film at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You just go to DIFWINS. I think that's it. Thanks for listening. Yeah.